Welcome everybody back to Veil of Sound, and this is some kind of special interview for me because the guy that I'm talking to is one of the first persons ever to do an interview with us. Back then it was still a written one, and we were talking about his solo stuff, but now Josh Graham is joining us to talk about his new band. So Josh, first of all, thanks for joining.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure. We already mentioned when we had that little chat before that none of the other guys seem to have time for us.
Yeah, we're very disappointed.
Well, in order for everybody to understand which project we're talking about your new band, Guiltless. Mm-hmm. And in that band, you are joined by Sasha from Intronaut, Billy from Generation of Vipers, if I remember correctly,
yeah.
And your also former bandmate, Dan, who was with you in A Storm of Light. Mm-hmm. So we could be talking about a supergroup, couldn't we?
I don't know about that. A supergroup of small bands, maybe. Well, yeah. Intronaut is not small. But
I know what you mean. And I figure that you have the same problem that I also do with that kind of moniker. I always think like supergroup, it is, I don't know, it puts a lot of pressure on that band, don't you think?
Yeah. Yeah. I was actually talking to Ben from Dillinger about mm-hmm. that. We were talking about that, like an idea of a project that we both didn't have time to do, but because he did Draft Tongue Orchestra, and he's like, yeah, he's like, I don't know if like the supergroups are worth it. The expectation is always higher, and the amount of time people have to actually dedicate to the project is smaller. So I think you're with that typical thing, you might not get the best results or expectations.
I think it's more of the expectation thing, right? You know, like I still remember when Dave Grohl did this thing with them Crooked Vultures, and expectations were skyrocketing. You know, like that must be the ultimate group.
Yeah, that lineup is insane, and the record's okay. So
yeah, exactly. It's okay, but it's not the reinvention of a wheel, so to speak. Right.
No.
Is that also in a way one of the ideas behind Guiltless, to have a project where, you know, like a fun project you do because you just like the guys and you like the idea, but it's not like, okay, we want to put ourselves under that amount of pressure, so to speak?
Yeah, but certainly when I started working on this music, it wasn't my goal to like, I mean, with The Storm of Light, we've had all kinds of crazy guests on the records. And, I just really wanted to keep it simple. And, mm-hmm. And I, like when I initially approached Sasha, it was about ideas for bass players. And he's like, I want to play bass. Let me hear the material. And he was like super excited about it. So, and I was like, we were all like flattered that he would have the time to do it and also wanted to play bass, which was cool. So because like I think the reason we released this as an EP is because I just kind of demoed these songs out, and this was just going to be a demo, and then somehow the sound quality came out good. We all recorded it ourselves independently in four different states, and I mixed it, and here we are. Yeah, so it's kind of crazy.
Yeah, although I have to say that the quality of a demo that the four of you put out, that quality is of high level. That is no surprise to anybody who knows any of the bands involved, I would say. Because, you know, all of those bands are known for really good structures and really, really good recordings. And you yourself are also not known to be somebody who accepts anything less than at least a 9.8 out of 10, right?
Yeah, I hope so. But so my point with that was we decided to release this as like an EP because now the band is formed and we're starting to work on the full length record, and that will be a bit more collaborative, like in as far as like actual writing goes. That's not to say that each member didn't bring like an enormous amount of quality in like addition to my like initial kind of rough ideas, but I'm excited to actually get into like the writing where it's a little more involved with everybody.
Yeah, that was also something that I was thinking about, you know. I mean, like you've already said, it's four different states. We have people living in the Moloch, the juggernaut of cities in California. Some other person lives close to where he gets greeted every morning by a bear on the porch saying hello. But how did you guys write those songs?
Just fully remote. Like Dan and Sasha have not been in the same room yet. So A Storm of Light toured with Intronaut in Europe with Ghost Brigade about, I don't know, 10 or 12 years ago. So that is our connection there. And then like Billy was obviously in A Storm of Light for, I don't know, roughly 10 years or so, but it's just remote. It's a weird thing. We talked about it in like Zoom band meetings actually, but like the benefit of writing remotely is everyone can work on their own time and spend as much time on an idea as you want. The cons of doing it remotely is there's less immediate return or like reaction or collaboration where you're like, I have an idea and the person next to you is like, I like that idea, but what if we change this little thing?
Mm-hmm.
So you're not really getting that sort of spontaneity. It does happen, it's just slower. So I don't know, it's weird. I would really love to be in a room for like 6 months with all those guys and like write a record, but given where we live and where we are in our lives at this point, it's not gonna happen. we may like work on stuff and then get together and try to like flesh stuff out a little more before we record, but I don't know, maybe not. Like we may save that kind of time and expense for actually touring.
So is that something that you guys are thinking about bringing the whole thing on tour?
I really want to. We'll see what opportunities present. And I never hold my breath for those. If we were to get like an offer for a support slot that made it worth it, I think we would do that. Otherwise, I think the idea of like, kind of like how Old Man Gloom works, where it's maybe you fly in and play a festival and play a couple shows around that or something like that. But we'll see. I really, really want to do it. Like, and I was just talking to Billy last night about like, because we don't want to have visuals in it. I don't want to like focus that attention and. On this, I want it to be a little more kind of focused on the music and not like a big production. So,
big production also, of course, always means that you have to get the right venue for that. You know, visuals don't always work in every venue. Of course, you know, if you concentrate on the music, it makes things also a little easier.
And we also like want to try to. We want more spontaneity and in the live shows, like, mm-hmm. you know, maybe the maybe part goes on for longer. And like when you're playing with visuals and a click track, like you're locked in, and I'm totally tired of that.
Yeah, I think there was a time for that. Yes. But I think, you know, 2024, I don't want to go so far and connect it to the pandemic, which put a lot of control and pressure over us and onto everybody. But I think, you know, I think we're at a point where spontaneity is really valuable again, which I also like. It's a little bit more back to the origins of where our music came from, right? You have also already mentioned that you all participated in that songwriting process. I don't want to know how much Sasha did or how much you did, but let me ask this way. Was there somebody who came up with a general idea and then everybody fleshed it out, or did everybody contribute with basic structures which you then all worked on? Is there a main songwriter in Guiltless?
For this EP, it's me. I basically had the song structure with guitar and vocals, and then Billy came in and worked on drums, and then Dan and I fleshed out guitars, and he had a lot of great ideas where we changed not the structure of the song, but like the actual parts, like the guitar parts. And then Sasha basically came in at the end and added just a bunch of depth and like aggressive like sound and stuff to it with the bass, which was awesome.
Yeah, I think.
But that's kind of, I guess, sorry, that was my point. Like, that as we move on to this next record, we're all collaborating. So it's from the very start, as far as like coming up with ideas and presenting, like everyone has the freedom to present like their own songs for this.
Yeah, I think also everybody first has to find his own spot within the soundscape, right? You know, which is not always very easy, especially if you have somebody like Sasha, who is usually playing the sixth string and now says, okay, let me play bass. I think that's also something which takes some time to get used to in a way. So yeah. I can see that. Just to make it clear, you have now already hinted at, a new record. This interview will be released a few days, so guys, when you see this interview and you're watching it in a few days time, you can listen to all the Guiltless tracks. But so you're basically already hinting at a new record, which is a cool thing for all of us, because it means that all of you guys must be pretty happy with the outcome of this shorter process.
Yeah, definitely. It's I've been wanting to do something more stripped down and heavier for a very long time, and I couldn't find like the right sort of combination of people who were interested in doing it, the in group reactions like have all been really fantastic. Like we're surprised. Like I actually had taken a break from listening to the stuff, just focusing on work, and when the premiere for All We Destroy came out, I listened to it again. I was like, oh wow, yeah, this is heavy. So,
it definitely
cool to reflect on.
Yeah.
Take a break, yeah.
So would you say that you became a fan of your own band in a way?
Well, I think you have to be to some degree, but for me, like, I generally stop listening to my music once it's recorded, like once it's done, unless we play it live. But I mean, we've toured, but Storm of Light has toured with bands where they're like listening to their own CD in the van, you know, between every show. That's not something that that I don't think any of us really do. It's like a, I don't know. I think I listen to it, enjoy it while we're creating it, and then once mm-hmm. once the document is made and the album is done, I pretty much move on. Like, I can't even tell you the last time I listened to through a full mm-hmm. record of anything that I've played on. Like, it's just weird. I think I always hear things like the Storm of Light changed vocally so much over the years. So mm-hmm. like sometimes I like, you know, X record, and sometimes I hate this record. And, you know, it's better me. It's done. It's out there. And if we ever play it again, then I'll check it out.
So in a way, what I also like about the record, you've already hinted at it. Many people will say this record is awesomely heavy and dense. It is. But correct me if I'm wrong, but I have a feeling as if there is a little smaller number of layers and tracks on each song. It's a little less complicated. Is that correct?
Yep, exactly. Yeah, that's a big thing that Dan and I discussed as far as the guitars. Like, we don't, it's like with Battle of Mice, there's like, I don't know, 6 guitar tracks like on every song. I mean, we weren't really concerned about like playing that live when we were in the studio, but Joel Hamilton's argument was that, you know, this is the document, this is the record, like, why not make it as good as it can be? Why not have like 40 guitar tracks and, you know, like all, you know, you put all this stuff on it, and to some degree, I totally agree with it. Like, I mean, there's like Nirvana, Nevermind versus Nirvana and Euro, and like, we all know the differences. Like, one, you know, one is totally polished and one is super rough. But for me, like, for this, like, I actually was reflecting on my time in Neurosis and with Steve, and like, Steve's entire like thing with the guitars, and like, and I mean, it's the entire band, but is that when they record with Albini, like, there's no overdubs. Sometimes vocals, but
but
it's very much itself a representation of. Yeah, it's very, very much about the representation of what you're going to see live. And so that was something that was important to me for this, is that, like, all right, well, if you can't pull it off while you're standing there on stage, then it's not going to be in this project. For A Storm of Light, like, we had keyboard tracks in there all on the computer, but I mean, that's like a weird combination of, okay, yeah, it's like the future and we can do that, but having that computer saved us having a keyboard player and someone to run visual. That band would have been bankrupt in like 2 tours, you know, had we had those kinds of expenses. So it's like also a practicality kind of thing, but for Guiltless, like, it's just not something I want to even think about. No computers, like, you know, I'm just over that process. Like, Ivy, my other side project, Billy has been, we played a Desert Fest in Antwerp in 2022, and it's all visuals. Like, there's all kinds of stuff on the computer, and it's cool. I mean, it's like it's more like an art show than it is a rock show. Mm-hmm. But this goal is like, it's a rock show. Like, it's a rock band. It's, for lack of a better word, I guess.
Yeah, the word that I would have used was like, in the approach to me is a very punkish approach, because, you know, rock bands, if we think about Zeppelin, if you think about Queen and other rock bands, they had like 30-40 tracks in each.
That's true.
On each song. Yeah, so I like this no bullshit, no nonsense approach that you have on this record and that you have for this project. I like that very much. You know, what you see is what you get.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks.
You're welcome. Because that is also something that everybody can look forward to when you're going to listen to the record on Friday. What is really interesting, and that is something that in our day and age, we always think that, you know, the more guitars you have, the heavier the stuff's going to be. And you basically go away from that, and yet the record is heavy and it is dense. And it's done by four guys who basically all play one instrument on stage. And, you know, yeah. that is a really cool thing that you pulled off there. Let me ask, how important was the mixing and mastering for all of this for you as a guy who did all of that in the end?
Well, Brad Boatwright from Audio Siege mastered it, and he worked with me, which was killer, because I am very like competent in getting sounds and like sort of like mixing these stems. I'm less confident in the final like results. So with Brad, I actually sent him the mixes, and then I sent him the stem groups. So drums on a stereo track, bass, each guitar, and vocals. And he actually did use all the stems. And so the mixing process for me was definitely a learning experience. And I think it was for all of us. It was pretty cool. Like, you know, Billy was recording his own drums, and which he had never done before, and Dan and I both were using our heads, but like these Two Notes Captor X things, which you can record direct without a microphone, but it's still using amp, which is cool. It was just this whole, and then like actually getting like the guitar tones and like how we were going to use the guitars on this was also like an entire like massively long process, but yeah, I think Brad like really pulled it all together and like added that sort of final heft that is like feels like what like the EP. So yeah, it's massively important.
Is that then also like the little bonus that you get from this project? You know, like gaining knowledge?
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean like my journey started like with like taking apart my guitar, and like I wanted a lower tuning, but like I wanted something that I hadn't really heard before. And I have one tuning that I've been using since Red Sparrows and Battle of Mice that no one ever plays, which is cool, but I wanted to like take that and even like bring it, make it lower, but like I think also be audible, because sometimes bands get so low that you're like the definition goes away. So yeah, it's like new pickups and strings, and then like I think the most important thing actually for the guitars on this is the Jonathan Nunez pedal, Tetrafet. It's like a distortion pedal, mm-hmm. from Jonathan Torch. It's like the best thing ever. It's like it's the heaviest and like cleanest distortion pedal I've ever.
Yeah, which is a difficult like combination, right?
Yeah, it's incredibly difficult. It's just somehow it's super clean and like very heavy, and you can actually hear all the notes. I mean, it was pretty crucial, even because I did all my guitars and then Dan was doing his, and ultimately came to his own decision that he had to buy the same pedal because he couldn't really get guitars to match it, or like that kind of clarity.
Which also again shows what a good ear Jonathan has for something like that, right? Is also striking about the EP is the drumming, and I would have liked to ask Billy about that, but the guys didn't have enough time to join us here. But no, just joking. What is awesome about the drumming is that it it at the same time sometimes sounds very industrial and tribal. So like artificial and primitive at the same time. How difficult was it for you and Billy, and maybe also the other two guys, to define that sound? Because it seems to me like it's a crucial element of a whole EP.
Yeah, it was a cool process. Billy's been like probably my favorite drummer ever since A Storm of Light played with U.S. Christmas and Generation of Vipers in Johnson City, Tennessee, in like, I don't know, 2008 or 9 or something like that. And we had a temporary drummer on the tour, and I saw Generation of Vipers play, and was immediately like, yes, I want to ask their drummer if he'll be in A Storm of Light. And so that's kind of like how that all started. And Billy played on like on the last Ivy record a little bit, and I wanted him to play on this. It was like since the very first idea, I was like, I want you to play on this. And he was really like reacting to the music, and it's like, yeah, I want to do it, but I want to change up like the approach and sort of try to figure out like how this is him talking, like how I can do something different with this project than what like Storm did or Generation of Vipers. And I think it in a weird way, like a lot of it came down to, like, I always think of Sabbath in my head as like something along these lines. And then you listen to it and you're like, oh wait, it's like way more poppy. But, and then like in Melvin's too, like, I think like Dale's, comfort with like minimalism and like the execution is just like insane. So I think when we were talking about drums in general for this, like those were some references. Like I think there's those kind of like headbanging moments and Guiltless that like hasn't really been prevalent in our other projects. And I mean, maybe to a certain degree, but so yeah, long story short, like he basically came up with this approach like that is kind of like equal parts stoner doom and like like early industrial, like it's almost like Godflesh, but like played by John Bonham or something.
Like that. Yeah, and that's also something that is very, very interesting, because very often it seems as if the drums are leading the way, and in the next second it's okay, you notice that there is not one leading instrument, but there is always that moment where you're like, okay, this is something where a lot of thought comes together and a lot of experience of structuring songs. Which is, of course, something that is clear. I mean, like, this project is not the first band for any of you guys. Would you say that a lot of the experience that you have from your other bands gave you also some kind of advantage when writing these songs? Or did you say, like, everything off the table, we want to do everything new?
No, I mean, you definitely have to. I would say that this band is definitely a culmination of all of our experiences. But you can take those experiences and say, all right, I have that knowledge, but like, I want to do that. I want to do this. I want to do something different. I know, like, I have a lot of friends that are musicians that kind of just play what they play, like it's their style, and I think with everyone in this band, like we all listen to so much stuff that we can be like, well, we're gonna make a weird electronica record or something, like, you know, or like we're gonna make not electronica but like synth like experimental stuff, but or we're gonna do a project like Guiltless, or Dan has like several black metal projects that are top secret, but they seem to do well. So yeah, I think like we, yeah, it's like learning from your past and then try not to repeat yourself, I think. So that answers your question.
It does. It does. It's a good answer. And I have one question that I still couldn't answer myself. That on the one hand has to do with your project's name, your band name. Because, you know, Guiltless, very programmatic term. If you were to give a state of the world, not state of the union, but state of the world address at the moment, what kind of picture would you be painting? A bright one or a dark one? And I want to use that as like the starting point for the next question. But first, like, what kind of picture would you be painting?
Pretty dark. I mean, I don't even know what's going to happen with the U.S. Hopefully Trump does not come back. Yeah, I don't know. I've been reading conflicting articles. I mean, if you look at, like, you know, 90% of anything that is science-based, and I believe in science, so I guess you have to say that now. But, I mean, it doesn't look good in general for the next 100 years, maybe.
Yeah.
And then I've read some other dissenting articles that are saying, well, you know, the largest countries are trying to meet these goals to kind of rein in climate change, but to me it seems a bit too hopeful, maybe, like outside of reality. Mm-hmm. I think it's possible we can all be living in sort of like the last somewhat normal like stage for a while, like until climate refugees become like a massive, like they're already happening now, but mm-hmm. if it gets to a point where, like, I mean, I grew up in Phoenix, and if they actually run out of water, I mean, you're talking about like 8 million like U.S. climate refugees, like that would be a world opener, eye opener. So yeah, I don't know, my outlook is pretty dark.
And then I want to pick up your band's name, Guiltless. Do you think that people in general are guiltless of this position, or should we be taking more responsibility?
Yeah, it's a weird question to answer, as far as you and I and everyone we know, like what could we actually do to have changed our current situation, or to change like the future? And that's through, I mean, typically through voting. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's like you have, everything is controlled by like the largest companies in the world that are like just about making money. So I think the term guiltless is like, it's definitely a weird word, but I really liked the kind of weight of it. And I think that individually, like, not a lot of us can do anything about like where we are at the moment, but I think as like a species, obviously, like it, we're essentially the driving force of negativity on the planet. So
I just brought that up because I think that in a way, yes, every individual person, apart of course from those in charge, every individual person is in a way guiltless. But if we try to see us as a bigger picture, as like mankind, a collection of individuals that then could work together, if we think about that, then we have to say like, okay, we all can do something. Small things like turn the light off on the porch if you don't go outside, you know, or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Also protest. Yeah. I know in that sense, we're not guiltless. But I think for you, the word is more connected to the individual than to all of mankind, right?
No, I would say that it's 100% a sarcastic.
yes.
Like the, if there's a little like snippet I wrote on the website, which is, you know, as everything crumbles into the, you know, abyss, like, you know, we're all guiltless, like, who gives a fuck? Like, it's, everything's going down in flames. Yeah. Like, why should I feel any guilt? Just, like, ride the wave down. You know, it's just like,
yeah,
like utter sort of sarcastic negativity. But like, and it's also like built around that sort of feeling of not being able to change much about it. And, mm-hmm. I mean, it's, I would say that that word definitely has a negative connotation in general. It's like a, like it can be perceived in so many like bad ways, like mm-hmm. that sort of like I feel no guilt about anything I've done, you know, I mean, it can be like, you could, you know, a serial killer or something is guiltless, like whatever, you know, but it's a, I think that,
and I bet a lot of them have said that, you know, I didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah, 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 yeah. So I think like there's definitely it's definitely a lot to unpack. I think it's I was actually astounded that the word had never been a band name. It had never been a band before. Like I couldn't even. I mean, a one-word band name in, like, 2024 is, like, it's, like, almost impossible.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's a band in the 90s called Guilt, which is, like, really awesome. And actually found this band name came out of, like, a sentence in Blood Meridian. It's Cormac McCarthy. Mm-hmm. But that's like where I kind of like focused in on that term. And then the fact that it had never been a band before, and like the weight of the word itself, and like the sort of, I mean, it can be that you're an evil person and you feel no guilt, or that you're an innocent person and you have no guilt. So it's a pretty cool double sword, I guess.
Yeah, it's very ambiguous. It's also ambiguous in the way that it's ambiguous in itself, but at the same time, a lot of people from different points of view and different positions on certain topics would use the same word to excuse their actions. Correct me if I'm wrong, but when I listened to the record and when I thought about it, I had the feeling as if this record, in a way, and here we go, circle to what I said about the experiences, in a way, it is a connection to a lot of the topics that you had in A Storm of Light. For example, also the last record, Unforeseen, Is that just my imagination, or is there a lot of things tying in again together?
Actually, the obelisk, JJ, I forgot his last name.
Kojan.
Yeah, he wrote it.
Kojan.
Pardon me?
JJ Kojan.
Yeah, he wrote. Yes. He wrote a little snippet. I think it was just for All We Destroy. I don't think it was for the EP, but he said that I've basically been talking about this stuff since at least Red Sparrows, which is, you know, 20 years ago at this point. And that it's unfortunately still completely relevant. So it's a constant theme. And for me, like, I will say first that the lyrics in this record definitely, they go further in that it's a bit more almost, I think All We Destroy is pretty on point with the Storm of Light lyrics. Like Dead Eye and Radiant Glow are a little more surreal, like just a weird imagining of like the worst case post World War III life, you know, which is for me typically like, especially if you're playing heavy music, like you're typically yelling, you know, and it's a very emotional or cathartic sort of release, but I personally can't see like screaming about like witches or like demons or, you know what I mean, like if there's like a true connection to the motion or the mood on in these bands and like a real honest depth, like it's about all this stuff. It's about the sixth extinction of you know, human caused like demise of many environments and ecosystems and stuff like that. So it's a, I would have to like fight to come up with something else to write about. And I think as long as I can not like fully, you know, repeat myself, then I'm happy with it. But I'm definitely okay with like continuing like the subject matter in general.
Yeah, I also think that as a lot of these things are still more relevant than ever in a way, why go astray from that? You know, if the world hasn't changed, why try to treat it as if it has? You know, why not keep on shouting, screaming your anger and venting it out to the world, right?
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Like, therapy.
So, Josh, first of all, thanks for all the insight into the new project. And, of course, also the outlook on even more great music by Guiltless. But you know that nobody leaves the Veil of Sound interviews without having to go through a quickfire round at the end. And it's just the same this time. Unfortunately, I conceptualized it for all four of you. No problem. But I can also cut it down a little bit. Everybody knows how this goes, so I won't explain it again, you know, like, forget it. So, Josh, if you had to choose between two records by Generation of Vipers, would you choose Howl and Filth or Dead Circle?
Howl and Filth.
Why?
I love like the atmospheres of that, and like everything, drumming, like, I mean, those, I love those guys. They're like, I've toured with all of them. So it's in different, Josh has played with Storm of Light, and Travis did sound for Storm of Light when we toured with Converge. And that record is just great.
You have mentioned that sometimes you listen back to stuff that you have done before and you think about it and you're like, I could do a little bit. I could do a little better here. I could do a little better there. I'll give you two of the Storm of Light records and just think about with which one are you still more content? Anthrocene or And We Wept the Black Ocean?
There are moments on Anthrocene I really like. I think the songwriting is substantially better. I'm not sure that I like my vocals on that. I think they're also mixed a little high, but I would have to listen. I think Black Ocean, like, is. I read someone had a comment on the Neurot Instagram where they're like, "This record sounds like you're drowning and like you're pulling your, I don't know, something like drowning with your best friend or something, like like sinking down in the ocean or something." And I was like, "Oh yeah, you totally got it." But so I would probably go with that one. I think, which is a weird thing to think about first and last, but
I mean, like. I know that you are always in the process of creating by trade, you know, either it's packaging or it's mastering or whatever. Is that something that you constantly have to do with yourself, like reevaluating your process?
For some reason, and I don't know if it's the best reason or not the best reason, but the best like outcome is that I always am like pushing some new creative process, like I mean the Storm of Light records have a pretty crazy trajectory as far as like vocally and stylistically, and I think it's important, and I actually, but that said, like I really plan on reining that in with Guiltless. Like I want it to continue the aesthetic that is being set with this EP. Like it's and that will be interesting. I think that'll be like a new challenge actually. Mm-hmm. It'll be like, yeah, like you can do anything you want, but maybe just don't do that. Like keep it focused, you know. It's I think a problem for me is that, like, I've listened to all kinds of music. I have, like, since I was a kid, you know, and like I was whatever 12 listening to Black Flag and The Cure. I don't know, like, you know, it just, and it's continued that way like all the way through now, you know. So I have to keep in mind what the focus is and like not lose it. So it's weird how the creative process works. With design, like I think it's super important to like always keep pushing and like, and not repeat yourself. I think with music, it can get a little it can be a little distracting for people that like your band.
I can see. Yeah. With Battle of Mice, there were two splits, which I still hold very, very dearly to my heart. One with Jesu and one with Red Sparrows. If you could choose a split record partner for Guiltless, I have one in mind that I would like to see, but maybe you go first. If you could choose any band still active, that would be on a split record with Guiltless, who would you choose?
Man, that is a rough one. Oh, wait. My cat is like eating the X-Acto blade. Hold on a second. Blade I cut my finger with, which is on Instagram. Man, yeah, that is That is a tough one.
Shall I give you my idea, which I would love to hear?
Yeah,
If we stick with New Rot Records, I would love to hear you do something with Kowloon Walled City.
Oh, that would be awesome. Yeah. Yeah.
If we're talking about general music without the label, then it would be Human Impact, a new band by Chris Spencer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that band's awesome. I sort of missed it, and Dan was just telling me about it like 6 months ago. I've listened to it a couple times. It's cool.
Yeah, they're recording new music as we speak, which will also, of course,
cool.
be very, very, very interesting.
Yeah.
You see that I had basically one band member choose records from another band member. So I'll give you the couple that I thought about giving you in general. I thought about you choosing between two Intronaut records, Prehistoricisms or Void.
Which one was first? Void is
Prehistoric.
First, right?
You mean in chronological order? It would be Void, which was the second, if I remember correctly, and then sometime later there was Prehistoricisms.
Oh, okay, yeah. I think the Void, because it's like the much heavier, like kind of like aggro stuff, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah,
definitely. Definitely.
Yeah, I really like that. I love where they ended up, especially like with some later stuff. It's crazy. Like I remember when I lived in LA and they were kind of like first coming up. Like I never would have guessed that sort of trajectory, which I guess
mm-hmm.
is sort of the same with the Storm of Light. Like Black Ocean, the Anthracene is like a like what, but
that's the same band. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, like that early Intronaut stuff was killer. Like I want Sasha to do some singing on Gillis, so we'll see if we ever actually get there. I think it's a little harder. We both have like pretty different phrasing, like approaches, and like I'm curious to see like what we can how we can work that in.
If you could choose one director or a movie by one of those two directors, would you rather choose a movie by Martin Scorsese right now as we speak, Martin Scorsese or Quentin Tarantino?
Probably Tarantino. Because you never know quite what you're gonna get. I think
mm-hmm.
Scorsese is pretty solid at this point. I mean,
yeah.
Within you know it's gonna be dramatic and like super involved and like very very slow moving. Like whereas Tarantino definitely is, you're like what's this one gonna be? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm still curious if he goes along with what he said like 15, 20 years ago, where he said, like, I'm going to make 10 movies, 10 different movies. Kill Bill 1 and 2 count as one, he said. But after those 10 movies, it's over. I still... will be interesting to see if he does.
Yeah. Yeah, because was the Elvis one, was that the last? Was that the 10th?
No, I think in his counting, there is one more or two more. I'm not sure.
Okay.
But I'm not sure about that. But as far as I remember, he's not done yet. Let's put it like that. Let's stick to movies and let's go along a little bit with the, I don't want to say post-apocalyptic, but futuristic storytelling. This is one that usually divides people. Star Wars or Star Trek?
Hmm. Man, yeah, that is what era?
No. We're talking about franchises here. You know, there is no era in franchises.
Yeah. Guess I would think I would maybe go Star Wars because all the new stuff is pretty cool. Like the I feel like it's like when you know Mandalorian and Ahsoka and like that this era of that franchise is killer. And I think it may be better than like the Chris Pine Star Trek stuff is I think great. As a kid, like the Wrath of Khan and stuff, like I just wasn't quite into it, especially like the Star Trek with the oh God, the guy from oh Scott Bakula, like no thanks.
Yeah. That was one of one of those series that we had in the late 90s, early zeros, right? Yeah, I am.
Then if it was Star Trek series and Star Wars the movie, I would say Star Trek. So I would it definitely.
Yeah, that's a problem with both franchises, right? And I have a good friend of mine who's a colleague of mine as well, and she always says like, well, you cannot compare both because one is a fantasy thing and the other is a fairy tale.
Oh, yeah, totally.
And I'm also not sure if out of all the Star Wars movies that in story wise telling chronology follow the Return of a Jedi, there is at least one out of those three that we did where I say like, I don't need that one. The second one just didn't do anything for me. But again, tastes different, right? You brought up the following question by indirectly connecting Nevermind and In Utero. So this is your choice.
I'd probably go Never Mind. The songs, I like the songs better.
It's very interesting, you know. I would also still say the same, but I have to say that In Utero, the older I get, the more In Utero grows on me.
Yeah.
Which also probably has something to do with Albini's production. I like the production of In Utero much more than Butch Vig's production of Nevermind.
Yeah.
But the
Yeah,
song
actually
on
left.
Nevermind are just unbeatable.
Yeah, they're better. I would love to have heard Nevermind recorded by Albini. Like that probably would have been
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. You said that you were listening to all kinds of music. So let's test you on New York hip hop of the 90s.
Oh,
KRS-One versus Gangstar.
Gangstar.
Can you say why? I would also have chosen Gangstar.
I just at this moment I remember it more than KRS-One, so I was.
For me, it's easy. It's just the flow
Yeah.
that Guru has on these records is unbeatable.
Yeah, I worked in a record store in the 90s for like 6 years, so I had a that's I think that's how I got like so rounded as far as what I listened to was everything.
The last one for you, and also something that you indirectly brought up, The Cure. I'll give you two albums, and you have to choose between, what is it? 7 seconds, is it right? 7 seconds?
17 seconds.
Yeah, you know which one I mean. This one and Disintegration.
17 seconds.
For me, it would be Disintegration. But also
Yeah,
because there is this great cover album of Disintegration.
oh, really?
Yeah, there is one where you also have like Dillinger do a cover.
Oh, shit. Oh, that's cool.
I'll
I'll
send you a
look.
link.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, I saw Disintegration like from like first row or something, first or second row. like the tour, and it was cool.
Be careful! Be careful! Your cat is up to something in the back.
Oh yeah. my favorite record though is Pornography. That record is like insane. It's like the heaviest, like weirdest record out of that entire time period. I don't know. It's like, mm-hmm. I know it was, they were sort of like falling apart, like as they were touring, but
yeah, but it's interesting that very often that those records keep a very long lasting image, right? Yeah.
I always wanted to try to do like a cover record of Pornography, but like I think there's too many vocals. I think it would it'd be like one of those things like where you're like, I don't want to listen to this. I just want to put on the actual original record. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. So Josh, thanks for all the time. I can only suggest that everybody listens to the Guiltless EP as soon as it's out, because it's really good. And as soon as you've probably heard those four tracks, you will also be yearning for more, as I am. So thanks a lot for doing this, and enjoy the rest of your day. Your chance for any final words to our audience.
Yeah, thanks for watching this, and yeah, thanks for checking out the music. Hopefully we can come play live near you sometime soon.
Yeah, Europe. Forget America, Europe. Yes.
that's basically been my touring motto for the last like 10 years. It's like play in Europe before we play in the US. It's possible.
So enjoy the rest of your day.
Thanks. Yeah, have a good night.